They come from the bowels of hell.
The Dana Gould Hour.
Jungle worms and swamp rats run around your feet.
Not only are sick individuals highly susceptible to infection, they also serve as sources of disease agents, even though the signs and symptoms of infection may not be apparent.
And once again, welcome back.
The Chinese have a curse. May you live in interesting times. Thanks, guys. As my father would say, sweet boneless Christ on a pogo stick. This is the first Dana Gould Hour of the social distancing era. And we're going to get off to a great start with the hilarious Matt Bronger. Matt has a new album out called Please Hold Me, which you can't do because we're practicing social distancing. We're staying in whenever possible. We are washing our hands a lot. We are being kind to people and not hoarding and keeping an eye on those less fortunate than ourselves who may need help. We will get through this the same way we have gotten through everything that has been thrown at us before. And I know that's true because if it wasn't, we wouldn't be here talking. As the Brits said during World War II, keep calm and carry on. I would add keep calm, carry on, and wash your hands. Stay up on what's going on, but don't drown in news. Don't obsess on the negative. Find out what's going on and then listen to some music. Listen to a podcast. Be good to yourself and the people that depend on you. One good way to be good to yourself is to pick up Matt Bronger's album, which you can do. It's called Please Hold Me, and you can hold it, theoretically. True Tales from Weirdsville takes on disease. How it started, not COVID-19, disease in general, how we as human beings evolved to the point where we became exposed to pathogenic microbes, and how it has affected our history, and more importantly, how we beat them, as well as some great disease movie recommendations. To that end, get to the point about my personal appearance schedule, which is empty, because I'm a responsible citizen and I'm not going on the road. All of the gigs for all of the comedians have been canceled, as well they should be. And hopefully they'll be picking up in the summer and fall. I've got a lot of great stuff coming up later in the year that I'm looking forward to, and hopefully we will all be able to go out of the house and enjoy them. But we're going to take it day at a time. As I say to myself when I'm got a lot of work to do, or I say to my kids when they feel overwhelmed by school, you only have to do what's next. So don't freak yourself out. You only have to do what's next. Take a breath, keep calm, wash your hands, and carry on. And that brings me to our Patreon. What I would like to do during this period is increase the frequency of the podcast to keep everybody entertained as much as possible when they're at home. I'd like to get them out every other week. And I think that will be pretty easy to do. And that brings me to Patreon, which I use only to pay the people who make this podcast. We are a nonprofit, not by design, but that's how it works. But I have producers and editors and sound effects people that make this podcast what it is, and I pay them with our Patreon. If you go to my website, danagould.com, you can click on the Patreon banner, and it's $5 a month. For that, you get a little extra audio content. You get some video content. I've been posting my old pilots and some interesting things that you might enjoy. And I hope you find it worth your while. It helps me keep the lights on here, as they say. And we don't have special grades. You know, it's like $73 every 2 weeks and I'll come to your house and wash your pet. Not going to happen. $5. I get a podcast going. You get some stuff. It works out really well. Oh, yeah. So anyway, go to danagould.com. Check out the Patreon thing. If you haven't already, and if you have, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I put that money to good use. As you will hear right now, as we get on to our responsible, clean, and germ-free business.
Ah! Gould Hour. Free and worth it.
It's a gray, I guess, late winter, spring. It's spring, I think. Gray, kind of raw, early spring day. The last gasp of winter before temperatures creep up into the upper 90s and lower hundreds. Before we get back to normal LA weather where robins and blue jays randomly burst into flames while flying through the air. And I'm joined by one of my favorite people, one of the funniest people I know, certainly to appear on this show, whose name doesn't rhyme with Bloody Blepitone. He has a new album out called Please Hold Me, available not only online and at fine record stores, but you can actually pick up an 8-track at your local druggist. Please welcome Matt Bronner, ladies and gentlemen.
This is the sound of my voice.
Now, Matt, you have a new podcast as well as a new album.
It's basically a new incarnation of Advice from a Dipshit with right. Matt Bronner, where it's called This Might Help, and right. That's debuting in probably a couple weeks. We're kind of, you know, beta testing it, basically, like running.
Right, right. But well, my advice to you is to do 1 7-hour episode every 7 weeks.
Hey, that's what I loved having yours because it was always like, it's a nice hunk of meat. I can just dig through the next couple of days.
We changed it.
Yeah, I like the new incarnation too.
Trying to creep some more people in,
mm-hmm.
And it allows me to get them out. What happened is we're not here to talk about me.
Well, aren't
we? I started listening to podcasts.
Yes.
And I went, I'm doing it wrong.
Oh,
and it only took me 8 years.
But isn't that's the lesson we can never learn. I am always like, I should record my set and listen to it. And it just comes down to, I hate myself. I would rather throw bleach in one eye.
Oh, man. Bobcat and I did our tour.
Right,
and
yeah.
We filmed 3 of the shows.
Yes.
And Bob, who is a very talented director, mm-hmm. is editing it in. And it's also a documentary about sort of our friendship and
cool.
We used to not like each other,
mm-hmm.
And now we're best friends.
Yeah.
And it's different shows. And
sure.
He's like, hey, can you watch those shows? Like, no.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's awful. Just
tell me what you don't want.
It's awful. But you learn so much.
Yeah.
It's listening to your own podcasts, listening to other podcasts, like digging through what you like, what you don't like,
yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's invaluable, but it's also one of those things that you're like a parent that's like, do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly.
I'm fine. Look, I'm fine being drunk in the afternoon, but you
shouldn't be.
You don't know. No. Tomorrow I'll be different. Yeah.
I'm supposed to be at work right now. I have a reason. So tell us a little bit about what Advice from a Dipshit was and how This Might Help is different.
It's the same format in that people call and leave a message anonymously, and then I have a podcast producer who culls through them and picks ones, cherry picks ones, and just throws them at me as we record, and I never know what's coming, and I just draw on my own life's mistakes and also non-mistakes and give them the best advice I can without ever Googling. You know, I don't ever. I'm not going to give you technical advice on anything, but it's going to have a lot more guests this time.
How to put together an IKEA hamper.
Right. Yeah, no. But the old one was myself and Amanda Rosenberg, who is amazing, but we kind of both realized she had a lot going on. I never wanted the podcast to kind of be a twofer. I kind of wanted to do my own thing and stuff. And it when we kind of broke up, it was the most amicable breakup I've ever had in my life where mm-hmm. it was that thing of like, I'm not happy. I don't think I am either. You know, it's
great.
And we're still great friends and everything, but she's awesome. But also the new version has no curse word in the title, which hit so many walls.
Yeah. So many walls.
And to me, this might help.
We did that too when we went on tour. We were like,
but that was a tour,
but still it was like, what's the worst?
Yeah. For those who don't know, Dane and I co-headlined and did a tour called the Bukkake of Smiles. And it was just based on a text chain where we were back and forth.
But it was like,
brutal.
What's a dumb title?
Yeah.
What will cause us problems where we don't need problems?
That's my thing, though. I love doing dumb time. I mean, even this new one, This Might Help, is just like, I don't know.
That's a good.
This might help. Couldn't tell you.
You want as a title
something that sort of flows off the tongue.
Yes.
And I also found like the podcasts that I listen to have great. Do you listen to Love It or Leave It?
No, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, it's great. John Lovett is so funny.
He's on
Pod Save America, which is another great title.
Mm-hmm.
Pod Save America.
For sure.
Great. And Love It or Leave It is just like, of course, Love It or Leave It. It's an expression.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I always come up with, you know, like NASA with a Z, the Interstellar Space Party from Outer Space.
I feel like one of the laziest kind of comedy is just like wacky band names. Like anyone can do that shit. Yeah. I feel like the new one is like, if you can come up with a podcast name that sounds insane, but like that could be one. That would find a market.
We're doing another, going into purple states and helping turn them blue.
Right on.
And we're doing a benefit for the guy that's in Arizona. He's the astronaut. He was the husband of the woman that got shot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blanking on everybody's name.
That's weird because that's on his campaign sign.
Yeah, my wife got shot. Vote for me.
Terrible.
But we're doing another show at Spaceland. They're all hosted by Dr. Zayas.
Oh, great.
Naturally.
Mm-hmm, of course.
But we're trying to come up with a title. And the last one was in December. It was called Christmas with a Z, which was
that's
really
great.
Good. And this one is really good because I'm literally like, I'm over like the outer space orbit because he's an astronaut.
Perfect.
Aponaut.
Perfect. Yeah.
Like, how do I make a wedding cake out of it that no one would
mm-hmm, want? Yeah.
But you had two, this might help. And also Please Hold Me, which is perfect because also mm-hmm. comes right off the.
Sure. Yeah. And that was like, at my wife's, bequest a year ago, she was just, you know, it's that
she
thing.
She said, Please Hold Me.
She said,
went, what a great name for an album.
And I ran out the door and then she left me. I had spent, you know, a couple years getting this, my last special, shot and, getting it shot and everything was fine, but then just getting it set up at a distributor, then a network, then all this. Right. So it just took years. And in the meantime, I'd written, you know, an hour and a half of material. And my wife was like, just do an album.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I did last
great.
Time.
Absolutely.
That's what
because
I did last
honestly,
time.
People listen to albums more than they watch specials.
Absolutely.
On the main, which.
Absolutely. No, 100%.
And, yeah. And as you know, Gene Kelly said, he wanted to dance the dance of the common man. And that's me. That's me, Dana. But yeah,
he was a bastard, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
It was. Oh,
like
damn
on,
it.
Singing in the Rain. Who was it? Was it Doris Day or somebody was Singing in the Rain and they just brutalized her.
Oh, damn it. Yeah. Well, oh, well.
Maybe it's false.
Yeah.
Let's just spread the rumor.
Well, let's be honest. There's some shitty common men. But
I've never heard of one.
I'm taping an actual special later this year.
Homer Simpson. Yeah, yeah. Men are always right. That's why everyone loves us.
Yeah, that should be on a T-shirt.
That's what.
Yeah. But it was.
But you are filming the special. Is it material from?
No, it's an entirely new hour. Okay, and great. So that's in the meantime. And I taped this album a year ago, and it's just fun, and people seem to like it. And
yeah, great.
The title is just based on it's kind of.
You
I was
have
thinking
the
about
best.
Today.
You have my favorite album title in history, Shovel Fighter.
Thanks.
That's just.
Well, that was that bit was just based on people say like, you know, comedy, it's the hardest job. I'm like, there's a guy in a factory that would argue with you. And so I was just sitting there. I was like, what would be the worst? Oh, you fight in a pit with a shovel against another guy and got to kill the other dude. It's just like, it's such an unwieldy, brutal object.
Yeah,
so,
there's a thing called, they do for breeding, livestock breeding, they do a lot of research into bull semen to get the best breed of cattle.
Sure. You know, right.
So there's the bull semen extractor.
Oh, that's
got to be the worst one.
It's tough.
And I just had this image of like a guy walks in, puts on like some latex gloves and the bull like whispers in his ear and he's like, okay, we're on a train and you're a bull. I don't know. And you sit down next to me.
Well, when in actuality, there's probably like a little robot cow vagina that they put right over the penis and just juices them right out. Oh,
robot is
done.
The correct pronunciation.
Robot. Okay. Yeah.
Well, isn't you know, they had that. There's this recently some people ran on stage at a political event screaming, "Let dairy die," and their movement is anti-milk.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Sure.
glad to see the spirit still alive.
Yeah. What I wanted to say real quick about the title of the album and that track is kind of a child in a sense of your Vincent Price bit, where yours was about when you're single.
Yeah.
You're a monster.
Yes.
Where mine is about when you're single in your 40s, you're a monster because you're not out for sex. You're out for something far more disgusting. Companionship.
It's really true.
Please. Where you're just kind of, you're next to a young woman and you're like,
just wanna listen.
Would you care to breed? I don't have long. My heart is beating with desire and savage palpitations from cholesterol. You know, like, and so it's like, it's nothing grosser. There's the young guy who's, you know, the grossest young guy is less gross than the not gross old guy.
Yes.
With a young guy, who's that? Who's the grossest? Like, he's so drunk, he's just like, I want to see tits, I want to fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Then what's grosser? Please hold me, please.
Which, I want emotional connection.
Even when I was doing that on stage, I was like, this does remind me of just, look at me.
Look
at my face. For those old school Dana fans who know that bit.
Yeah, it all comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done, like all responsible, you don't have kids. I have three. And like all responsible parents, I thought, well, I'd better stock up on supplies
mm-hmm.
if we get shut down for a couple of weeks.
Right.
Because I'm not so much afraid of a quarantine
right.
as I am. People are going to stock up.
Yes.
And I won't be able to get what I need
mm-hmm.
for my family.
Right.
So I then became the person I was afraid of
yeah.
and went out and stocked up.
Sure. No, I mean, I'm probably going to get a good amount of canned goods and I'll probably get some more, maybe like this afternoon. But I did do the thing where I don't know why all the toilet paper is going away. I guess it's because of the stock up thing.
Supposedly, the rumor is,
okay.
The rumor is
uh-huh.
toilet paper is made in China. And it's all shutting down.
Oh, is that right?
And so what I find it's interesting is that people are hoarding toilet paper more than other stuff.
Like,
I don't mind being hungry. I just don't want to be poopy.
I just want a shitty ass.
But also, I think that's, you know how cats will cover up their leavings.
Of course.
In sand or grit. Because to disguise where they've been.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all
expression,
right.
Hide the feces, save the species. And I think that's subliminal.
I've never heard that.
Oh, yeah. No, that's true.
Wow.
So that's also what's going through, I think, in human beings right now is a primordial, like,
oh, yeah.
We're going to have to repopulate the planet. I can't smell like poop.
Oh, wow. A deep down thing.
Yeah. It's yeah. all really our brains are going down into the medulla, like down into the brainstem now.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're hearing down there is it's ladies' night and the feeling's right.
Ah. Oh, what a night. What a night.
Yeah, but that's exactly what's going on. I mean, it is scary, and you know.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody.
But like, I will say for people listening that are kind of slowly going insane,
yeah.
I travel all the time. My travel schedule for the rest up until this summer is, quite frankly, bananas.
Oh, really?
But at the same time, people are, I will say this, I was saying this, I was talking to my parents last night, they're like, so what's it like traveling? I'm like, just as many people are in the airports, people I see a lot more masks.
When was the last time you flew?
Yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, okay. No, day before yesterday, excuse
day
me.
Day before yesterday?
Yeah.
I fly next week.
Yeah, but the big notice
Wuhan.
I've noticed is that, yeah, right.
in a wagon full of chickens. I've been, okay, finish your story and then I'll, because so, I've been to Wuhan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my middle daughter is from Wuhan.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah,
not the cleanest place I've ever been in my life.
So you got to drown her.
She.
I mean, for the sake of all of us.
Sure, of course.
Dana, I would never ask, but no.
This is a big ask. It was 05. And
do you like that little Twilight Zone turn I made? Yeah. Now, it's the only responsible. It's all your neighbors come over. We're all in mid-60s clothing. Yeah. I have a scotch in my hand. Dana, be reasonable. Let us use your bomb shelter. The aliens are here.
Everyone's in slacks, but it's a Saturday.
No, the only, I was talking to my parents and they were like, have you noticed anything different? I'm like, the only thing different I've seen is that men are washing their hands now. I always do, but I'm making a point where I've changed, like, wash them a little bit longer. Don't do that thing. I'll be late for my flight. Wet, dry. Oops, forgot soap.
I was at the improv the other night and I was washing my hands in the bathroom and I've also noticed that people really, they don't do the old turn on the water, run your hands under, turn off the water. Now it's like surgeons, like, clear the door.
It's almost like we're engaging in more than ceremony. When you're taking communion, you chew it and go, delicious Jesus. Like you say it out loud for what it is. So,
by the way, communion, great way to infect 200 people.
Yeah, absolutely. Body of Christ, touch your face.
Yeah.
Take this thing from my hand into your mouth.
Priests famously have never put their hands where they shouldn't be.
No.
So there's no worries.
Yes. I've commented that it's like it used to be. You'd go to the men's room and you'd see the guy standing around with plenty of urinals to use, with the guilty eyed look of a man who has to take a dump and he has to wait. Yeah. But now you have that many people, but they're not waiting to, they're waiting to wash their hands. They're all standing around. They're not touching. There's a kind of line, but
you've got to clean your tray table.
Yeah.
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 That's the real one.
A man got on next to me in my flight to Richmond, Virginia, and was like, you want one? I'm like, thanks. And I disinfected my whole area. And if those things weren't going for, you know, $1,000 a gram on the black market, I would carry them around with me.
Magic wand.
Magic
wand.
he gave me a used cum rag. And I was like, hey, better than this will kill it. This guy's just will kill anything.
An unused cum rag is just a rag.
Is it though?
An unused cum rag is also called a t-shirt.
Mine have are emblazoned with the words yum yum cum on them. How gross are we going to get?
We with a series with an archery target. There's that word does not sit well with me.
Yum.
There's that yum. Yeah. Well, there's that podcast called
Cumtown.
Yeah, which I've never heard, but I wouldn't listen to it on the title. Like,
I think that's what they're going for. Is just going for the.
I like being a little bit older.
The shock humor. I know a couple of those guys, and we get along.
I don't know them. I mean, I don't know who they are.
If
the guy who did it was sitting right here, I wouldn't know who it was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not commenting on that.
I'm always just like, oh, you young fellas.
Yeah, sure.
You know? That's it.
I remember when I was you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember when I
was young, dumb, and full of Cumtown. You know. Is that fair? No, I just made up a song for them.
But I worked on Parks and Rec, and I remember when I met Aubrey Plaza. I was like, oh, I remember when your name was Jeanine Garofalo.
Yeah, all right. Right on. Yeah, and she first got known for doing an impression of Sarah Silverman.
Yeah.
Like she just did a video.
They're all great, but it's just like,
totally.
Yeah, I remember when you were somebody else. Mm-hmm. I remember when you were blah, blah, blah. I remember when you were blah, blah, blah.
Well, and she, I was in the.
Aubrey's very nice.
I was in the Variety top 10 of 2009 with her.
Yeah.
And it's been fun to see her. Like now she's like a movie star.
Yep.
And I saw her maybe a couple months ago and she's still just the same nice, sweet person, you know?
So I went to Costco.
I stocked up on toilet paper like last week.
Yeah.
So I lucked out.
And I went
not to brag
because I'm just shitting everywhere. I use it when I don't need it. Yeah. I'm wearing a toilet paper tuxedo. I went with my 17 year old who's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
And we walk in and the first thing she says is, I mean, there are some people just normally getting their stuff.
Yeah.
And literally people in surgical gloves,
mm-hmm.
people in masks, which aren't going to help you unless you are sick.
Right.
And you're helping others. And she just goes, look at these savages scavenging.
Wow.
And then we saw a woman with a giant Costco cart, nothing but Milano cookies.
Oh.
And like
– to use a popular phrase, you love to see it.
You love to see it. And just her – punching, we're laughing so hard. She's punching her thigh, and then she said, and "I was like, that's my girl." She goes, in a very loud tone of voice, "We're gonna be quarantined. We need lip gloss and Chardonnay," and ran off into the store.
Oh,
no, she's.
I mean, do you?
She's look, professionally funny, like, but she wants to be.
You know,
thank God.
Lorraine's daughter Hannah is a monster. It's hilarious. Yeah. And I mean, do you think your daughter is headed that way?
She wants to be a marine biologist. She has
God
she
bless.
Has five 5 fish tanks.
That's my dream.
Yeah.
Is to have a funny, you know, daughter or son that does not want to be a comedian, but they're just, they have a decent sense of humor.
Oh yeah. No, she has an amazingly sophisticated sense of humor.
And God, that's funny.
She said to me, I found out what was wrong with my puffer fish. I thought it had the itch, but the salinization was off.
I saw a guy with a cart full of handle bottles, full handle bottles of liquor, which like bottles are for family reunions and sure. Such an overabundance of liquor.
You can tell a lot about a person by their like Armageddon stockpile.
Absolutely. Like, you know, absolutely. Like, but like the
home enemas and rum. All I need.
My first thought was just, well, that'll kill it. Like, you'll be fine. You'll die of something else, but it won't be a coronavirus. Yeah. You know,
but I always have an emergency stash of stuff here.
Oh, good.
There's a great company in Los Angeles called Emergency Cafe, and I'll hip you to it,
please. And, that's based on the earthquake threat, I imagine. Yeah,
because there's going to be an earthquake,
right?
And you need to be prepared. They say that like 2 weeks or a month. It's good to have a month of supply.
I have like I have a full backpack in my basement with like MREs and water and like I have jugs and jugs of water. But it's like, really, I'm going to eat MREs. I got to get something else. I'll
hip you to it because she was and my earthquake stuff is expired. Like every 5 years, you got to get. Like replace the water and replace the stuff.
Yeah.
And I have in my garage, you know, stuff. And it was running and it ran out like right now. So I'm like calling her. I'm like, hi, it's me. I'm not being like a weird neurotic guy.
Yeah. Totally.
But she was telling me, the woman who runs it, was telling me all of these things you need, like a crowbar.
Oh.
Like, why would I need a crowbar?
Yeah.
Well, in an earthquake, one of the biggest problems is your house cantilevers and you can't get the door. You can't get your bedroom door open.
Whoa. So you should have a crowbar in your bedroom.
Yeah.
And not just to spice things up.
Not to spice things up or to make your point. But yeah, there's all these things that I didn't like. Oh yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess. And you feel.
That's interesting.
You feel dirt. Like you feel dirty. Like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like back to my old dumb joke about the Twilight Zone, the bomb shelter one, where the only guy in the neighborhood has a bomb shelter. Let us in, Frank. You know, there's no one else planned. So they're too busy, you know, having scotch fueled swimming pool parties, exactly. You know, and complaining about minorities. But like,
Italians.
It's that right? Yeah. And worse, the Irish.
Yeah,
but
I know the one you're talking about.
It's good.
And that episode is the cousin of my favorite episode, which is The Monsters Who Do on Maple Street, which is where the...
Isn't that the same one?
No, The Monsters Who Do, on Maple Street
starts. Someone is an alien here and they just pick a guy.
Yeah, and they just like, they put the power goes out, but one house has power.
Yeah, oh, right.
And the guy doesn't know why. And everybody wants to know and they suspect the guy's the alien.
Right.
And then that house goes out and the other house has power.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And it's, I forget the name of... The actor, but Claude Akins is in it. Barry Atwater is in it, who was the vampire in the Night Stalker TV.
Yeah.
And then he looks like a little Harvey Weinstein. Mm-hmm. Why were your lights on?
Yeah, he does. He does look like a little Harvey Weinstein.
Why are your lights on? I forget that guy's name, but he's really great. I think his first name's Jack. But yeah, that's my favorite one. And it really is. And it's actually something that I'm one of the projects that I'm working on. And actually, I had it set after an earthquake, but the virus is better. It's just in the way, you know, you're only 4 missed meals from a baseball bat.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm maybe 2.
Yeah.
You know, I get really hangry, as they say. But
no, but
it's good to do that thing where you kind of plan ahead.
Kids. You didn't plan, you got hungry kids.
Oh, yeah, forget it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's part of me is like, well, what is this time we live in? But it's like, yeah, things have always been dangerous. We've just been very protected society, you know?
Yeah. And especially when you have kids, like that goes to like, I would rather go hungry than have my kids go, Dad, why didn't you prepare?
Oh my God. You know? What a feeling.
Yeah. It's like,
Yeah.
And it's so funny. I was moving some stuff around and I found a bunch of old, my school pictures.
Uh-huh.
And like my front tooth was chipped for like 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And I remember when I finally got it fixed was because the nerve became exposed.
Oh.
And I had to get it fixed because I was in agony.
Right.
But outside of that, and it looked like a broken window. You know, it just
broken tooth. Yeah.
And like, and I don't know if it was generational or if you guys like, you guys just dropped the fucking ball.
Right.
In a big way.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's not even different priorities. It's just looking at priorities themselves differently.
It's looking at priorities as a burden.
Yeah.
Between sitting and drinking and watching the Bruins.
Right. And we all just.
But I think it was generational. Like my dad is Don Draper's age.
Uh-huh. You
know, I know exactly what happens to Don. My dad's 89.
Okay.
And he was in Korea and, you know, and, that was his generation.
Right.
He was not that class. He's a very blue collar working class
of course.
Guy. Archie Bunker guy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I imagine what life must be like for him.
Sure.
He's living in flash. He's like Buck Rogers in the 25th century.
Without a doubt.
No idea. You know, a guy, Chris Matthews get fired after 30 years for telling a woman that, don't make me fall in love with you or some weird, innocuous comment.
Yeah.
To them, it's just going to be like Mars.
Yeah. Well, it was that thing where it's just like, oh, why'd they ruin his life? When in fact, it's like he probably had been making women feel uncomfortable for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of thing where you're like,
I love Chris Matthews and I'm very sorry that he had to, that they didn't let him segue up. You know, it's like,
I can't
he
say.
He was off his goddamn rocker.
Off his rocker. And I mean, that last shit where like the way he went after Warren and the way he
was
kind of like.
Telling thing.
Yeah. I was like, like.
The Sanders thing I don't buy. When he,
I didn't dig that either, but like, I won't get political or nothing, but
well, here's Ross.
I just want Ross Perot to come back.
Sure.
That's my whole thing.
Ross Douthat from, I'm probably mispronouncing his name, from the New York Times, who's a conservative columnist I usually disagree with, but he did say something about that was really spot on, which was if you ask any man over 60, a question that requires an analogy.
Oh.
It will be about World War II.
That's true.
If the gutters are clogged, the analogy is going to be World War II.
But I will say he chose the laziest fucking one you can imagine. 100%. The surrender of France.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
100%.
Like people always dog on France for that. But the Nazis were on meth. They were. Did you read Blitzed? That book is about drug use during the Third Reich.
Oh no, I didn't.
They gave meth to all those soldiers. So those soldiers
they were werewolves.
Of werewolf power,
but
werewolf confidence. So they're zipping through the streets. They're like, I can never be shot. And they're kind of right. And the French are like, French had the strongest military in the world
at
the time.
It's funny you mentioned that.
And got taken. And
werewolves don't have a lot of self-doubt.
No, they can't. They're made of pure hunger.
If you look at like the old Lon Chaney Jr. movies, there's never a moment where it's like, is this a good idea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like the whole thing of you know you surrender monkeys or whatever they call them the French that stuff. It's like they were not outside sipping lattes outside of a cafe and going take it it's fine you know like no so like they will always choose World War II analogies but his sucked.
Yeah, his did suck. And the thing that protected is oddly the only thing that protected Britain and America from that fate was water.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they had a channel. We had an ocean. And that kept them away for a while.
And I would wager at least 500 tried. They probably tried to swim and drowned. And they got pretty far before they sunk.
Save your battery and your disposition. When it rains, you can still enjoy the movie with a Drizzle Guard rain visor. Simply press suction cups to the windshield as shown in the detail on your instruction sheet. Drizzle Guards are on sale now at the concession stand, and remember, they are reusable.
They're true tales from Weirdville.
Oh, how much can change in a short period of time. As a friend of mine said the other day, the news updates nowadays read like chapter titles from the War of the Worlds. Paris has fallen. Spain has closed. San Francisco has sealed its borders. This is real, everybody. And it is nuts. I keep checking my lawn to see if Anthony Zerbe is out there in a black robe and a pair of Ray-Bans beckoning me to come out. So how did this all start? Germs, microbes, teeny tiny things. Once again, to go back to War of the Worlds, the smallest things that God, in his infinite wisdom, put on this earth. Okay, God, in case anyone has missed this, thanks. How did this all start? How did human beings evolve to a place where they became exposed to deadly microbes? I turned to one of my favorite nonfiction books, Jared Diamond's excellent Guns, Germs, and Steel. To quote Bill Gates, Guns, Germs, and Steel in 500 pages lays the foundation for understanding human history. Human beings evolved as hunter-gatherers, roaming tribes, a hunting and a gathering, and then agriculture, bitches! Food production. As Professor Diamond says, food production gave us germs, but also literacy, technology, and centralized government. The major killers of humanity in our history have been infectious diseases gotten from animals. Up until World War II, more people fighting in wars died not from weapons of war, but from disease. Microbes evolve like any other species, and they are as much a product of natural selection as human beings. The fascinating things about microbes is that they have evolved ways of spreading themselves from animals to people and then from one person to another. To once again quote Jared Diamond, the germ that spreads better, leaves more babies, and ends up favored by natural selection. Many of our symptoms of disease actually represent ways in which a microbe has modified our body so that we become enlisted in spreading its babies. It's really like the way the alien turns our body into a physical host for the offspring after the facehugger. That's not in the book, that's me. Look at the common cold. It reprograms your body so that you sneeze, projecting new microbes out into the air so that other people get them and become a host to the microbes, and then they sneeze, and the bastards! But what is it about agriculture that led to disease where hunting and gathering did not? Well, agriculture allowed people to stay in one place and provided a reliable food source. So where hunters and gatherers were always on the move, farming allowed people to stay put, and the groups of people grew larger and larger, living closer and closer together. But not being transient meant living in proximity to other people and livestock and everybody's poop, which is full of microbes. And those microbes have a nasty habit of getting into the drinking water. And where there is sewage and stored food, there are also rats. And rats are full of disease. So farming introduced the scenario where microbes could invade the human host. And the rise of cities made it worse, worse, worse. I didn't know this. It was not until the beginning of the 20th century that European cities became self-sustaining. Prior to that, their populations were only stabilized because people would immigrate in to offset the deaths of city dwellers killed by disease. It's crazy. Lastly, the other major contributor? Trade routes. During the heyday of the Roman Empire, trade routes had connected Europe, Asia, and North Africa. And that brought not only foreign goods into the capitals of Rome, but also disease. Diseases like smallpox, which killed millions of Romans under the name the Plague of Antonius. In the 1300s, it hit Europe as the Black Death. How? Furs were very popular tradable goods, and they were infested with fleas that carried the plague. All the big diseases came from animals. Cattle gave us measles, tuberculosis, and smallpox. Pigs and ducks gave us the flu. African monkeys gave us AIDS. But the main point of the book Guns, Germs, and Steel is the role that disease played in the conquest of the New World. How did Cortez conquer the Aztecs in the 1500s? He arrived in Mexico in 1519 with 600 soldiers. The Aztecs had a population in the millions, and they were fiercely militaristic. But in 1520, a slave ship arrived from Spanish Cuba, and one person on that ship had smallpox. The resulting epidemic wiped out half of the Aztec population, including their emperor. In less than 100 years, Mexico's population went from 20 million to a little less than 2 million. Same with Pizarro's conquest of the Incans. The natives of North America numbered approximately 1 million when the European settlers arrived, giving school children like me and probably you the idea that North America was this vast, vast, uncharted land with a tiny droplet of people on it and plenty of room for everybody. But archaeological research tells us that the original number of Native Americans was more like 20 million. But then Christopher Columbus came, coughed, and over time, 19 million of them died. Now, why am I going down this dark and ugly road? Isn't there enough bad news? Yes, there is. But, as they say, name it, claim it. It's important to remember, humanity has faced these crises before, and humanity has survived. It is not the end of the world. It is the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. Also, every time we face a pandemic, we are blessed with science and the knowledge gained from the lessons learned in the previous pandemics. The worst being the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918. Scientists do not know the specific origin of the Spanish flu. There are several competing theories. Many trace the flu's origin to a military hospital in France that treated victims of chemical attacks during World War I. During its peak, 100,000 soldiers passed through that camp every day. It was overcrowded and there was livestock and poultry nearby and in the camp itself. Doctors began to notice an extremely violent influenza running through the camp with an extremely high mortality rate. Now, one theory was that there was a form of the virus in birds, which migrated to the pigs, and then the viruses combined and were handed on to the soldiers. How did the virus spread? Well, as we have learned, it re-engineered the soldiers' bodies so that they would have to sneeze and cough, spreading the microbes to the soldiers nearby, and there were many in cramped, unhealthy quarters. The first case in America was reported in January of 1918 at a military base in Kansas. One soldier showed symptoms, but he was the company cook, working in the kitchen, preparing food for the other soldiers. Within days, over 500 other soldiers reported sick. By March, it had reached New York. Now, this was before TV and the internet. Information was slow to travel, and there were no preventative measures in place. Also, it was World War I, and lots of news agencies were practicing wartime censorship, telling people only what the powers that be thought they needed to know or wanted them to know. In fact, the reason it was called the Spanish flu is only because that is where it got the most news coverage. It did not come from Spain. It had nothing to do with Spain. But Spain was not involved in the war and didn't practice news censorship. So when the virus finally got there from France, it started to receive proper press attention from Spanish news outlets. Now, unlike COVID-19, the Spanish flu was lethal to young adults. 92% of the deaths occurred in people under 65. One thing we do have to be aware of is that the epidemic occurred in waves, and the second wave was deadlier than the first. One of these reasons is attributed to a good old fuck-up. The most deadly month of the Spanish flu was October of 1918. Just before October, the Surgeon General of the U.S. Army and the Journal of the American Medical Association both recommended very large doses of aspirin, 8 to 31 grams a day, as part of the treatment. But those levels of aspirin will produce hyperventilation in 33% of patients. And hyperventilation, when you have diminished lung capacity because of the Spanish flu, will result in suffocation. Smart move, guys. And then, as swiftly as it had come, it vanished. October of 1918 was the pandemic's deadliest month. But by November, the cases had dropped to almost nothing. Why? One, physicians became more adept at treating the post-viral pneumonia that afflicted patients. But the larger reason, at least the larger reason more readily accepted by scientists and historians, is that the disease mutated again to a less lethal strain, which is one of the weird things that viral pathogens do over time. Now, I know what you are all asking and thinking. How does this relate to cheesy, B-level science fiction and horror movies? I will tell you. Viral pandemics have played a key role in many of our greatest science fiction and horror movies. Richard Matheson's brilliant book, I Am Legend, became Vincent Price's The Last Man on Earth, Charlton Heston's The Omega Man, and Will Smith's I Am Legend. The latter-day Andy Serkis Planet of the Apes trilogy is centered around a viral pandemic that makes apes smarter and humans dead and dumber. Then there are the hit-the-nail-on-the-head pandemic movies like Contagion and Outbreak and The Andromeda Strain, which is the Citizen Kane of pandemic movies. But one of my favorites predates The Andromeda Strain.
I'm George Maharis, and this is The Satan Bug.
The Satan Bug. Produced and directed by John Sturges, who gave us The Great Escape, Bad Day at Black Rock, The Magnificent Seven, Gunfight at the OK Corral, and Howard Hughes' favorite movie, Ice Station Zebra. The Satan Bug was based on a novel by Alastair MacLean, who also wrote Where Eagles Dare and the aforementioned Ice Station Zebra. George Maharis plays a former U.S. Army intelligence officer turned private investigator. Okay, sure. And he is called in to investigate a murder at a top-secret American biochemical laboratory. Once he arrives, he is advised by one of the scientists there to seal the building in concrete. As it turns out, this is a bioweapons lab containing the microbes for a deadly pathogen strain called the Satan Bug, which could wipe out all life on Earth in a matter of months. The next thing you know, that scientist turns up dead, and the Satan Bug has gone missing. From there on out, it's a rollicking race against time, involving mysterious telegrams, sexy ex-girlfriends, and the only man with the knowledge of how to save the world being locked in a garage. And helicopters, lots and lots of helicopters. And Brill Cream. It was made in 1965, and everybody's dressed like Don Draper. It's great. It's a great little movie, with a soundtrack by the genius Jerry Goldsmith, and supporting roles from both Ed Asner, who played Lou Grant on The Mary Tyler Moore Show, and Simon Oakland, who played Vincenzo on The Night Stalker. And all along, you thought they were the same person.
Yes, the Satan Bug is top secret. It's no secret, however, that I think the Satan Bug is one of the most suspenseful and exciting pictures I've ever seen. But don't take my word for it. You see it.
The show starts in 3 minutes.
Before and after caring for each patient, a thorough hand wash should be carried out. The aim of this technique is to reduce the number of pathogenic organisms. Running water is an important element since it acts to flush foreign material off the hands. The water temperature should be that which is comfortable to the skin. While very hot water may destroy some organisms, it can also cause chapping and breaks in the skin, thereby affording harborage for pathogenic microorganisms. Infection may then occur, thus increasing the danger of hands as spreaders of disease. Soaps and related compounds, due to their detergent properties, are also effective in the mechanical cleansing of hands. Soap lather permits water to penetrate the skin pores and wash away dirt and other foreign matter.
Friction is still another aid in mechanical removal of organisms and is produced by vigorously rubbing together the hands and fingers. Where frequent hand washing is necessary, brushes are not generally recommended, since they tend to injure and excoriate the skin. Finally, the length and the frequency of the hand wash is an important consideration in achieving medical asepsis. Before the hand wash, all jewelry except a plain wedding band should be removed from the hands and wrists. Fingernails should be well groomed, and nail polish should not be worn. These precautionary measures will eliminate additional harborage areas for microorganisms. The area to be washed should extend about 1 inch beyond the line of contamination. In this case, the mid-forearm. The faucet handles and the soap are considered to be contaminated. They should not be touched with clean hands. First, wet the hands thoroughly. Take the cake of soap and work up a generous lather using the same friction motion as demonstrated earlier. Retain the soap in the hands throughout the procedure. Rinse the hands, again allowing the water to flow off the sides. Now, wet and soap each forearm. Transfer the soap from hand to hand between each lathering operation. After a thorough rinse of each forearm, soap the hands once again. Holding the soap by the fingertips, rinse and let drop into soap container. Continue washing the hands and cleaning the nails, ending the procedure with a drying of both hands and forearms. With the last paper towel, turn off the water faucets. The towel will prevent recontamination of the hands by the faucet handles. Not only are sick individuals highly susceptible to infection, they also serve as sources of disease agents, even though the signs and symptoms of infection may not be apparent.
And now, on with the show.
Oh, that book is hilarious because they not only start with the army, then Hitler starts, even though he's a teetotaler, they start – he gets this one doctor that keeps like giving him stuff, and then it's just like our addicts where first you take it orally, then you sniff it, then oh, it's medicine, I can shoot up. So by the end, he's just like, he just comes out and he's like afraid of light, so he's always like building these, like him dying in the bunker where, you know, it's – but it is – it's a – the guy writes –
I
zipped through that book like I was on meth. I read it in like 2 days because it's so fun. It's just, it's a blast.
Yeah. You're a big German pure blood walking around with a book called Blitzed about the Reich.
On meth.
That's a good book for you.
Well, you know, it's my name is German, but you don't really find it. It's kind of a butchered name that doesn't really exist in Germany.
Yeah, no, nor mine.
Yeah, but
well, I'm not German.
Well, but I'm about 80% Irish with some English thrown in and like a little bit of German. You know, my whole mother's side is Irish and my father's side is his mother was 100% Irish and his dad was Irish and German. So like that name kind of went out, but I'm mostly kind of Irish and English. It just for those of you who wonder, but I do like that my name is, you know, I always think about like if I took my mother's maiden name, if I went out and started my comedy career as Matt Bailey, it would probably be a lot more. It sounds more fun. It's more, you know, barroom fun guy. Bronger, it just sounds.
And for no reason, dressed like a milkman from the 40s.
Perfect.
White with a black bow tie, tray of milk.
Yeah, with a tray of milk, but they're beers. I mean, that would fly. That would be huge in comedy clubs.
Did you have a milkman as a child?
You could get milk delivered from this one this one dairy, local dairy in Portland. And I think that my parents tried it for a little while in the early 80s and then went like,
had a milkman. Mm-hmm.
But it was at that point, it was almost an affectation. It wasn't like people didn't usually use the milkman.
We had it in the late 60s, early 70s. And one of the things about America that has gone is that people no longer confidently drink a liquid a stranger left on their porch the night before.
I guess it's fine.
Give it to the kids.
Sure.
again, it's just like it is so interesting to see just the crazy, crazy change. And I do feel like, and the virus is not a part of this, but it feeds into it that culturally we are in the middle of a big brush fire.
Oh yeah. Sure. As I said before, a lot of this before we started rolling, I said, I've just been casually saying on stage when I'm doing one of my sets on the road, isn't it just a relaxing time to be alive?
Yeah.
And it always gets a laugh.
It's true.
No matter how you feel politically.
And I told a story. I went to mail something at the bottom of the hill and it was after hours and the mailboxes now have metal slots on them at night.
Oh.
Yeah. And I went back, what's the next day? And they said, well, the homeless population, had found a way to use them for toilets.
They've been peeing into them.
And I'm hoping that's where it ended.
Yeah. I can't imagine. Yes.
But I guess the mentality that they had was we either seal off all the mailboxes or find a way to help them.
So
immediately they sealed up all the mailboxes.
Well, I think it's that thing where it right now let's put the slots up, and
well I said like why don't you have because thanks to Amazon we have all these empty storefronts now.
Yeah.
What if you just put 40 porta potties in the place?
Yeah.
And then pay a cop, and then he has a job to police it.
Uh huh.
And they say because I chased this up. We don't want to establish a cycle of dependence. And that's when you know you're fucked.
Absolutely.
When they because
well, I mean, you mentioned Amazon. It's like the reason they're big is because they bought all the storage space.
Yeah.
They just bought it all up in the 90s and then, now they can hold it for shipping and all that stuff, but you own all that and you own all the space, which some of which could be used for homeless housing, and we can argue all day to the cows come home about that, but like you don't pay taxes. You as a company don't pay taxes. Right. So it's one of those things where you're not giving us our money. Why don't we take a couple of your warehouses?
It's amazing.
But it's that it. Oh, well, the not paying was, taxes
the
makes
the point I was making. Was that whenever anybody in the federal government talks about dependence. And this is one of the gifts from Paul Ryan. When they kick people off welfare or cut their food stamps.
Yeah.
They call it freeing them from dependence.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
Of course
in the
do.
Way that like if you know somebody who's in a wheelchair, throw them out of it.
Sure.
Now they're free of their dependence on that chair. Now they can crawl around in the gutter and start a business.
You thought you had no choice. Now you do.
Yeah.
What?
It's it is amazing and I don't know the solution to any of this stuff, but you do feel like, yeah, we're at a tipping point. Something,
yeah.
It's like 1968. I mean, my friend used to say, like, if the world didn't end in 1968, it's not going to end this year. Imagine everything that's going on now, but we were also at war.
Oh, yeah.
Where people's teenage kids were being sent for a reason they could not articulate.
Yeah.
And the people that you did like, that Bernie, the people of Bernie, Elizabeth Warren is shot, then Bernie Sanders is shot, then
Like,
and they're killing the people that gave you vote.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it is that thing where I'm really, I don't know. It's like I feel like, not that I'm naturally optimistic, but I feel like I don't have a choice. Where I'm just like I can't be like fuck it, none of it matters kind of thing.
I don't feel that way at all.
I'm on the road all the time and I see people from all manner of the political spectrum coming together and
individually
and the bottom line, we all want the same thing. We want our kids to grow up healthy. Yeah. We want to coexist. We don't want to fight. There are people that make money off us fighting.
Sure.
And would make money off of our kids getting killed.
And they go into that business.
That's kind of the pushback and I think about, my parents mentioning how they had high school friends who gone. My dad's best friend, Fuzzy, just went to Vietnam, never came back.
Right.
And then, you think about.
Well, Fuzzy wasn't his birth name.
No, yeah. His name was Fuzz, Fuzzy, Wuzzy, Fuzz. No. No, but it's like he had a crew cut. So that was his nickname. But we had this time in the 80s where we just ignored legions of gay men just dying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another one where it's just like, well, someone is staying rich by not providing them healthcare.
Yeah.
Right. So, like there's lessons.
The genius of that era, because having lived through that era,
me too,
and having been sexually active in that era,
mm-hmm.
was they made you think, oh, no, straight men can get it too.
Mm-hmm.
Which really wasn't the case.
Well, I mean, it
wasn't as, you weren't at
not at risk
as at risk as
yeah.
other people, but that the belief
mm-hmm.
was a great motivator to
yeah.
look. We got to fix this.
Well, and it's because it reached that tipping point where it's just
absolutely.
Like holy fucking shit. You know, we're letting Americans die really
yeah.
just like that because
yeah.
you disagree with what you call a lifestyle,
yeah.
which is yeah. So,
well, that's again, we don't want to get into politics, but
no, yeah.
I certainly don't.
I know we're like let's not talk politics,
but just
kind of diving in.
The brilliance of putting Mike Pence in charge of containing the coronavirus.
Oh, it's that
a man who single-handedly caused an HIV/AIDS outbreak because he was morally
mm-hmm.
Well,
and now
to a clean needle program.
That and this is the last I'll say in the thing. Of any of this stuff, but like that press conference with the scientists, it's just like, you fucking buffoon. Like
yeah.
just where he's just saying stuff where they're like, no one said that. That's not true.
No, it's not. A lot of people say it makes you stronger.
People have died from the flu. Really? Like he said that out loud and then was like, people are amazed at how much I get. I could be a scientist. I had an uncle was a scientist.
Did he say that?
Yes. he bragged about how well he understood things.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
So,
it's amazing.
You know,
somebody said to like, you can see him trying every trick in his book
mm.
and it doesn't work because it's a virus. Like
right.
I'm surprised he hasn't nicknamed it yet.
Yes.
The crazy coronavirus.
Uh-huh.
He hasn't nicknamed
it. So
he
can laugh at it or
yeah.
something.
And
yeah.
he hasn't, you know, he can't tweet it away.
No.
He can't disinformation it away.
No.
And he doesn't know how to handle it.
And it's funny that thing where you know, I don't hate anybody, but you know, that guy's gotta go. But there's that thing where it's like, oh, maybe this is finally the thing that will get people to go, oh wait, yeah, fuck that guy, you know, kind of thing.
I think that gives me
no comfort,
sure,
because I just think about the people who have lost friends and family. Sure. It's just like,
this will be his, I think, probably his mm-hmm. Katrina,
and like, it's just like,
but I didn't get, you know,
yeah,
it was just like, yeah, you're inept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
but back to the thing of being optimistic. Generally speaking, we're okay. I think,
yeah.
you know, and we're all still here.
Well, you know, it's like you said, it's not a relaxing time
nope.
to be alive, but it's interesting.
Uh-huh. And it does make you go, "Welp, I got to relax. I have to focus on what's important. I have to focus. I have to reach out to friends I haven't talked to in a while.
I have to focus on things that you can change.
Mm-hmm.
The action that you can take.
I have a bit about how I got a shitty tattoo on a dare in a pool hall when I was 19 and mentioned the guy by his first name. And then I had people come to my show and go, hey, we're friends with Eli. And I was like, how's Eli doing? I haven't seen him since I was, you know, barely 20 or 21. And a dude just emailed me. And the subject line is like, first, apologies about the tattoo. Because he threw me on the back of his motorcycle and took me to get it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so he's like an old childhood friend. Yeah, well, I compare it to Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, where it's like, the bridge isn't there, but you got to take a step. You have to step into that abyss.
Yeah.
And you might fall.
The only person I know that references that movie.
Me?
Yeah, that's it.
I love that movie.
I'm so excited there's going to be a 5.
Oh, God.
the
4th one was so bad, man.
See, I thought The Last Crusade was... Is The Last Crusade better than I think it was?
Oh, it was great. Him and Sean Connery together?
I just hate him. Dad, oh, geez.
Oh, I loved that. Like, I dug that.
Here's what I liked about Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
All right, now...
Well, I dug
finally,
the...
Finally, we can start the
That's what everyone's been waiting
We're
for.
Talking about a movie.
Get your dicks out.
Sure. And Indiana Jones. You can hear every woman shutting off the podcast.
Right, yeah.
We're both kind of assholes. They were shady.
Indiana wasn't as much of an... Indiana was shady in that he would steal indigenous
right,
artifacts.
That first shot of him stepping into frame of the mm-hmm. shit. Like, he's like, I'm not sure I trust this guy.
I would argue, I don't know if I trust... He would... Look, they're both badasses. Han Solo was an asshole.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I would say they're, you know, they're... There are tons of assholes. They're not all badasses.
Right, sure.
And I wouldn't say all badasses are assholes. So I think Indiana Jones is more of a badass than an asshole,
mm-hmm.
in a sense. You know, like he went, you know, the scene where
his
he's in front.
His podcast is over.
look, Han Solo as a professor, when that girl shuts her eyes and it says, love
Indiana
you.
Jones.
Indiana Jones, excuse me. If that was Han, I actually yeah. meant to say Han
Solo. If that was Han Solo.
He'd be like, I'm fucking that chick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Indiana's like, no.
You better go.
I can't. I'm a professor.
Yeah.
You know? Very case in point.
Very true. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so But I was also kind of blinded by the fact that
in the Star Wars universe, that girl's name would be Flirto.
Right. And it was a Star Trek universe, she'd be green. But
it's like people like his name's like the greedy character is named Greedo.
Oh, I got it. Yeah, it took me a second.
Wow.
Yeah.
there's a bunch of them.
I do admit there is a bit of a personal thing because, like, my dad kind of looks like Sean Connery in that movie, like the same gray beard. Uh-huh. And he's kind of like
Junior.
Very, very studious, not a dick like that guy is, but like, you know, not really that much of a outward man's man kind of thing. Yeah. So I love the fact
that it was amazing.
Indiana is saving his ass again and again and again. Yeah. And this guy is being a typical thing. And I'm not going to lie, when he fucking hugs him, he's like, I thought I lost you, boy. Tears.
Sure.
Oh my, it just gets me. So that's just... Maybe the movie does kind of suck, but I fucking love it. Yeah. I love it.
And I'll have to give it another shot. And the brilliance of having James Bond be Indiana Jones' father.
And not a man's man. He's a fucking, he's just scared all the time.
Yeah.
All these things are happening. I'm not used to people trying to kill me. Happens to me all the time, Dad. You know, like, it's just this funny. Yeah. That was what I loved Spielberg when he did that much more than he was just like, I'm going to make you cry every 2 minutes. You're going to cry. You're going to cry.
Yeah. And then you go into The Last Crusade, the scene with the snake in the quicksand. Which I still don't understand. It's like he has to grab onto a snake to get pulled out of the quicksand.
And he hates snakes.
But he'll grab onto them. Don't call it a snake. Call it a rope. Like, one, what are you trying to do? Two, it was so obviously a set.
Yeah.
It looked like Gilligan's Island. it was so obviously. Mm-hmm. And you walk out of that going like, what are they thinking in there?
Mm-hmm.
And they walk out going, good job.
Yeah, we did it.
Yeah, what do you...
Yeah.
What? I just don't...
Well, do you remember when the second one came out and it was just like that whole controversy of, is this R? Is this PG-13?
Oh, yeah, no, I saw the second one opening night. I remember seeing the second... And it was 1984 in Boston.
Yeah.
And it was like getting tickets. Uh-huh. The analogy at the time was, it was like getting Prince tickets.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't
get Couldn't
in.
Get them, yeah.
And I remember... seeing it, but I remember walking out going, that wasn't that good.
You know the wild thing about it? We had a dog that was pregnant, and she...
I like what I'm hearing.
Here we go, right?
I like where the story is.
So she had one pup, and then the other pup was stuck, wouldn't come out.
Oh, yeah.
And so we drove to the vet, and the vet drugged Copper, our dog, and got the puppy out, and then... we had to take him home, and they're like, your dog is real drugged out and might not recognize the pup, so there's a chance she might kill the puppy. But you don't have an option here. This is nature. You put the puppy in the dog Passing, bed.
Yeah.
And you let nature take its course. So we put both the puppies in there, and Copper just saw him and growled, and we got out of the house, and we went out to eat. Because you got to leave the house. And we're just like, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, my parents probably had a couple cocktails. Or just like, holy shit.
What are we
did our 9-year-old son might come home to 2. And like, why don't we go to a movie? Yeah. And I open the newspaper and full page, Mola Ram, Indiana Jones, you know, the skull and the flames. I'm like, oh my God, you guys. And my dad was like, I hear he ripped some heart out of a chest. I don't remember what we went to. We did not go to that night, but I remember being like, please. And in my mind going, fuck, I got all the ammo right now. I'm going to win this. You just put me through what could be the death of a puppy. Let's go see Indy. And I didn't win, but at the same time, I understood why we didn't win, but we came home and the puppies are alive and they're nursing. Everything's fine. Yeah.
You came home and the dog is wearing the dead puppies as earrings.
That'd be amazing if I just left the story at that. And we saw a different movie. So let me talk about this album of mine. Everyone's like, did the puppies live? Yes, I'll murder you, Bonger.
My mother tells a story of, I was the fifth child of 6.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as he's like, if I was not in flames, I did not get a lot of direct attention.
Sure, right.
How odd that I would go into an occupation where attention was mandatory.
I was literally the opposite. Oh, only really? Child.
Oh, funny.
You are a golden magical boy.
Oh yeah, no, I was.
You know, within reason.
Of course.
But it was also
you're not,
was them being like,
that was a surprise to
my
me,
dad yes. being like, I have 9 siblings. or eight siblings. Yeah. Let's just friggin' have one for the love of God. You know, and it was, you know, they never missed a chance to be like, I love you. But at the same time,
of course,
I didn't shit gold.
Yeah, no, we didn't, clearly you're very, balanced, but, I would have never known that.
Thank you.
But, I didn't get a lot of like direct attention, but my mother tells a story and I do not remember it. I was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And watching television, and the commercial for Escape from the Planet of the Apes came on.
Yes.
It was coming into the theaters.
Uh-huh.
And my mother said, I stood up on the coffee table and looked my parents in the eye and said, we are going to that movie. You are taking me to see that.
Good for you.
And they could have easily hid it from me. Like, I'm six. I'm not reading the paper. Like, is that
totally.
That thing my mother didn't know. You said it was such for that when it came.
Wow.
We took you.
Yes.
And I remember going to see it.
That's awesome.
At the drive-in. That with Bobby Deerfield, the Al Pacino car racing movie.
It was called Bobby Deerfield?
Yeah, Bobby Deerfield was a movie he made in 71 where he played a car racer.
Amazing.
Before The Godfather.
Oh, yeah.
Al Pacino before The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I'm mistaken, unless that was after The Godfather in 1973.
Do you think Al Pacino...
for the Planet of the Apes.
Do you think he'll ever make a Cruisin' 2?
especially at this age.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Just play like an old queen still in the leather. I think it'd be amazing.
Well, it is. Like, Al Pacino is a great example of that kind of actor that, you know, Nicolas Cage, they start off like these really intense method actors.
Yeah.
Like Godfather Part Two, his performance is huge.
Yeah.
But his acting is so internal.
Yes.
It's so internal.
I'd agree with that.
And then he becomes Vincent Price.
Well, but here's the thing. Have you seen Hunters on Amazon?
I haven't seen it yet.
It's fucking awful. It's so bad.
Oh, they were going to say awesome.
It wants to be like a Tarantino thing. And there are parts I was like, okay.
Is it about
Nazi hunters? Yes, exactly. Thank you. God, I forgot that guy's name for so long. I read his book about actually hunting Nazis. It's obviously based on that. But Pacino is so good in it. He's so good as this kind of understated Jewish organizer, kind of almost a mob boss in terms of this team of people. They're like, we're going to catch him and we're going to kill him because this isn't revenge. This is self-preservation.
Right.
You know, because he gets this young guy who has misgivings. I can't just go murder these people. It's like, if you don't, they're going to try to do it again.
Yeah.
These are, you know, and then you have the Nazis that are, you know, cartoonishly villainous and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's also just.
They do. It says in the script, moo hoo hoo. Yeah. And that's how they laugh.
And not to be a man with a German last name who says, lay off the Nazis. But no, but it's like, it's that thing where the Nazis, that was the last conflict that was World War II. That was the closest thing we'll ever have in our lifetime or in our species time in recent memory that it's like, oh yeah, man, fuck those people kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was pure evil. But it's just, I don't want to say it's tired, but you know, it to trot them out again. And I love the idea that there's still Nazis out there and they hunt them down, but they made it so cartoonishly when they introduced the team and their specialties, so to speak. They literally have that fucking song from Pulp Fiction playing. That ding 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 ding, and it's flames rising up, and they're all stepping up and saying, "He's a weapons expert from boo 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 boo."
Comic book,
and not a good one,
right?
It's ripping off the best stuff and kind of. So I hated that I hated it, but I was like, oh come on! But Pacino's so good in it. He's so good in it.
I don't have enough time to watch everything that I should watch.
I'm always looking for something that's going to be like my show that I know my wife isn't going to like, you know, cause I like scary stuff you know, more, a little more violent stuff sometimes or thrillers that she might not be into. And so I always have that thing of like, do you want to watch this? And if she's just like, no, I'm like, great. I got my own thing, you know, because we have different schedules. That's
sure,
all.
Sure. You know? Yeah.
And I wish you would watch more of the stuff that I'm into, but and she says the same thing about we're kind of working together more. I'm watching more.
Yeah. Well, you find, my wife's when I was married, this goes back to when I was married.
Mm-hmm.
Our show was ER.
Nice.
And then it was the L Word.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And then it was either before or after the L Word, we watched the OC.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's a very specific time in my life where I had a very normal life.
Mm-hmm.
Woke up in the morning. We had breakfast. She went off to her
yep.
day job. I went off to my day job.
Mm-hmm.
We came home. We had dinner. We got in bed. We watched television.
Yeah.
We went to sleep. We woke up.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was nice. It's a little island of normalcy.
And it's nice to have those shows that are just like, all right, this is our dumb thing. Like my wife and I have Vanderpump Rules, which is a reality show about these 20-somethings that all work at the same restaurant. And
right.
It's all those reality shows on Bravo are the same pattern. We're all friends. Two of us are fighting. Let's drink it out. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. That didn't work out. That's a bad call.
Let's drink it out.
I'm sober now. I'm sober. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk it out. I miss you. I miss you too. Hug. Let's always be friends. Let's have a drink. Fuck you. Fuck. It's over and over. But I love Vanderpump Rules because I used to be a waiter and I used to be a bartender. Right. And it was the most incestuous, debaucherous time of my life.
Yeah.
But you look back on it and you're like, I'm glad I lived through that because it was just fun. And it's like, that's who should be doing that. Drinking away their problems and then learning from it and fucking each other. It shouldn't be Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. No. If you have three children and you're in your 60s, you shouldn't be going out and getting loaded on tequila and then screaming at each other and having this fucking dumb, because you have too much free time, this dumb, nemesis situation. But But it's fun. It's fun that we kind of have that and we follow it and like, It's this thing. I would have always been like, I would never watch that show, but I'm just like, whoa, I kind of relate to this. I remember doing that.
Especially
I remember
if you
that
were
time.
A waiter, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Kat was, and then we're like, we were going to go eat, and she was like, we're going to go eat at this one restaurant. And she was like, actually, when I quit that restaurant, it wasn't the greatest day. So maybe we should go someplace else.
Ah, that's funny.
Do tell.
I have a bit of my act about how I'm like, we should reinstate the draft. And everyone's like, oh, and I'm like, no, for bad jobs. Rich kids should have to work bad jobs for a month.
Yeah,
for a month. If your parents are millionaires and above, your son Rhett has to go bus tables at Golden Corral for a month. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Kat and I have started to watch Schitt's Creek.
Schitt's Creek is brilliant.
Been on for 20 years. But I have
five.
But I have three kids.
But it's like,
but to me, the brilliance, because I'll be honest with you, I'm working on a couple of TV projects.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them.
Which one am I starring in? I meant to ask.
This one.
Should I? Great.
It's called Coach Donger. But I'm working on this one where I'm like the only person. Who wants to see this is me.
Sure. Like, you got to have one of those.
It's like Stand Against Evil, but way more specific.
Nice.
And I'm like, no one. And then I watch Schitt's Creek and I'm like, fuck it.
Yes.
I'm writing it. Like,
absolutely.
This beautiful diamond came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it was Canadian. Da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
But, it's like, it gave me so much faith.
Yeah.
It was like,
well, and it's just, it's so
Who's
beautiful.
The star? Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, I know.
Well, we love it. Could it be?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, the fact that that's Eugene's son and he's so fucking funny, but in a different way than Eugene.
Yeah.
Completely different.
Is that his son who plays the son?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's his son. The cast is bananas great. Everyone's so funny.
I have acted with both Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And both times I have that, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like shooting and I'm looking in their eyes and they're doing it and I'm like,
uh-huh.
Well, here we are.
And Kathleen's whole thing on the show is err on the side of ridiculous, which has always been her right cross of Ernie Shavers, where it's just like, it's the hardest hitting. When that woman goes ballistic crazy, there's nothing.
Catherine O'Hara is like Bruce Campbell to me. It's like,
mm-hmm.
Do you ever get mad that you're not more famous? No, I'm mad they're not more famous.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And Chris Elliott.
Yeah,
is just
amazing.
Just showing up as he, when you're like, okay, we got Chris Elliott and he's playing the worst guy.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I'm watching that show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had to explain because Kat had never seen The Man Under the Stairs or like Marlon Brando.
Right. Yeah.
Just like all that stuff that we do on Letterman.
Mm-hmm.
Just like so beautiful. So da-da. And that's the
dog food taste test.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just like, you, if you can, if you can get it to work, try, you have to try.
Uh-huh.
I'm amazed. The show that amazes me is Batman from 1966.
Yeah.
Like when you,
like how that happened
and you watch it now and it's like, I watched it as a kid,
mm-hmm.
and people don't realize that it was not a kid show.
No,
it was on prime time twice a week.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Cause it was a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And it was on like Tuesdays and Thursdays, or like Wednesdays and Fridays to complete the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And it was it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
And people, you know, it's like, it's really Police Squad. It's just shade below Police Squad.
I literally thought of Leslie Nielsen before you said Police Squad, because I think of that thing of you casting the perfect person as Batman, who will be a very rigid, I talk like a man, I am a man. But it sounds absurd because you're in that outfit.
Yeah.
And, you know, why is he always with this younger man? And this thing, but they're cool with it, and okay, great. And then you take Leslie Nielsen and you have him do comedy and do the lines exactly the same. And it's pure, because all those guys knew how ridiculous. I worked with Kirkwood. What is his last name? He played Red on that 70s show. He was Clarence in RoboCop.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. When he walked up to me on set with it jangling a bag of Cheetos, and we're wearing suits from the 40s, a show called Agent Carter. Right. And he's like, "You having fun?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Cheeto," like offered me a Cheeto. And I took it. I was like, "You yeah, having fun?" I'm like, "Hell yeah, I'm working with Clarence." And he goes, "Ha." And he smacked my ass and walked away. And he had all these stories about, he was like, "Yeah, I was on Star Trek." And can I just say, Clarence probably went top 10 villains of all time.
Sure.
Bitches, leave. Like, he was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But he's like, Star Trek came up, me and just the people talking, and he's like, "Yeah, I was in a Star Trek movie, and I was the leader of the Galactic Federation, some bullshit, and I'm up behind this podium, and William Shatner and Captain Kirk they shoot lasers, and he jumps and saves me, you know? But the first shot we did, I had to lay down, and Shatner had to lay on top of me. So that's how I met William Shatner, them laying on top of me." And what a great story.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
But the funniest part is like Galactic some shit. So you know Leslie Nielsen and all those guys are like, "I was in something, Space Voyage to some crap."
And they always talk,
"Can I have another drink?"
Yeah, guys that call it a show. "Yeah, I was on Titanic. That was a long show.
That was a weird gig."
Yeah, they always call it a show. Mm-hmm. That was a long show. That was a long show.
That was a movie.
That's what it's like. When I talked to Jeffrey Combs, he's like, "Oh yeah, no, I was on Deep Space Nine. I actually was two characters on the same episode of Deep Space Nine."
Yeah.
And then he's like, "And I got paid separately for both of them."
Oh, God bless.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's just work.
Yeah.
They're just going to work.
One of my favorite scenes of one of my favorite movies, Blazing Saddles, is, you know, when they're in the commissary and it's all the actors eating.
Yeah.
And there's a guy dressed as a cowboy and there's a guy dressed as Hitler. And he's like, the other guy dressed as like a soldier or something. And he's like, "It's like, you in the next scene? And are you working all day?" He's like, "No, I'm done after the bunker scene." Like the Hitler guy says. I love that so much.
That's so funny.
Hitler blew his brains out.
There's a great thing. Well, you know, people talk about punching up, punching down.
Sure. Right.
You know, and by the way, I'm not knocking Mel Brooks. I know Mel Brooks.
Sure.
I love Mel Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned. But people talk about like comedians punch up, but they punch down, like Blazing Saddles. He only punched up. And then,
no.
And then it's like, he would throw you out of whatever room you were in if he heard you say that. It was like, you get to the end of Blazing Saddles, it's not so politically correct, but suddenly the choreographer's like, "Come on, girls!"
And that part makes me laugh so fucking hard.
Of course it does.
Well, I mean, it's like, I hate to admit it, but it's that thing where, look, put it this way, you know, G. Charles Wright, casting extraordinaire, gay. You know, he was walking with his boyfriend once, and his boyfriend was like, "Oh, why do I like these dresses so much?" He's like, "Because you're a faggot." You know, and it's, And I say that, you know, but Dom DeLuise, gay man.
Yeah.
With all these guys, just, you know, gay queens, you know, on the Broadway scene and top hats. And it's like, who did those routines? Gay men. And they can't get the routine down. And Dom DeLuise comes out and just stops and goes, "Watch me, faggots." And it's so fucking funny. Because I don't even think it's funny because of the word faggot. I think it's funny because he's so angry at his own.
Yes.
At other guys. It's, God damn it. You know?
Yeah.
It's
all. It's like, well, he can say it and you can.
Well, of course he can. But he did.
But it's just like, fine. He did say it.
He did say it. And it's like, and
he would be angry if I
the most offensive thing in that movie is Mel Brooks painted brown, playing an Indian, saying, dude, they're darker than us. Like, all right, take it easy. You know? And like the thing is, you know, Mel Brooks wrote all the N-word jokes in that movie.
Yeah, Richard Pryor wrote all the Mongo stuff.
Yeah. And it all kind of works. But you didn't look at it as like punch up or push down. And you cannot use that movie as an example because it's an anomaly.
It's an anomaly.
That's like, that movie is like if your child was born being amazing at gymnastics.
Yeah,
like,
no, I asked
how the fuck? That's never going to happen again.
I asked him. I said, "You couldn't make that movie now." And he said, "I couldn't make it then."
Exactly. It's an impossible movie.
And the studio hated it.
Right.
They were going to bury it.
Mm-hmm.
He had a screening for the secretaries.
Uh huh.
And they went back and told their boss that you have to see this movie, and then they get it to the distributors.
Yeah.
All great things. You know, the same with Star Wars. Like,
right.
They hated it. They hated it. They hated it. Then after it was a hit, they thought it was a free. It wasn't until the success of the movie was jammed down their throats that they grudgingly accepted it.
There was a book by the producer of Fight Club, and he produced a bunch of other stuff. But that was a movie they were like, they're really going weird, you know? And they did a screening for the execs, and traditionally execs will never say anything to your face as they pass you unless they love it. They'll be like, "I love it." But usually it's, you know, poker face, and then you get an email next week like, "It was fantastic.
Right.
I've never cried harder," or whatever.
Right.
But they went out of Fight Club and they ran up to him. They're like, "You killed Brad. You killed Brad Pitt. He will never recover from this. What have you done?" Because that was their golden goose.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I would argue you would never have Brad Pitt as we have him now if you didn't dirty him up.
Yeah.
Chip his tooth, show that insane body, you know, in that thing, and have him be the ilk. And that movie has so many problems with it, but it's that thing where sometimes you have to, back to your point of just writing whatever your fucking show is, just do it.
Yeah, you have
to do that thing.
And sometimes it doesn't work. And there's a great podcast. Like, I'm not a Star Wars psycho.
Oh, me neither. Hell no.
I like
every new Star Wars movies. They still have to blow up a goddamn version of a Death Star.
I like 3 of the 12 movies or 9 movies. Mm-hmm. I like 3 of them.
Yeah.
I like Star Wars. I like Empire, and I like Rogue One.
Yeah.
Those 3.
Okay.
And that's it. And I remember walking out of Return of the Jedi in 1983.
Yeah.
Going, that sucked.
I was 8 years old and I loved it, but I was 8 years old.
Yeah,
you know?
I was 19 or 18.
I still dig a lot about it, but I think the thing about Star Wars is it's magnificently silly.
Yeah, and it was
it's knights in space.
Right, and it was not a 40 movie. It was one movie. He had an idea for one movie.
Great,
and then he pulled everything else out of his butt.
Yeah.
And if that was not the case, every sequel would not be a remake.
Within 5 years of them letting Lucas letting it go a little, I was going, oh, wow, cool. There's going to be more Star Wars movies, too. There's going to be more Star Wars movies. Like, that's how I feel now.
But The Mandalorian is great because
I got to watch that
because it does what Star Wars, just as you said, it's knights in space. The Mandalorian is just Gunsmoke.
Great.
With spaceships.
Hey,
it's just an old Western.
I was literally named after Marshall Matt Dillon on Gunsmoke.
Go.
So I got to watch
there
it now.
No, not only that, but the end credits are paintings of scenes from the movie.
Oh, fun.
The show like they did on Gunsmoke.
Mm-hmm.
So this it, and then
but I will say Bill Burr on there suggests that there is a space Boston, which is strange to me.
There is a space Boston. And it's so weird. The other giant scary alien in that episode is Clancy Brown.
Oh yeah,
my neighbor.
Yeah, oh cool.
And I saw him the other day walking his dog, and I said, "Hey, I didn't know that was you on The Mandalorian." He goes, "Yeah, I was with your buddy Burr." And then I drove out, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm in Hollywood."
Yeah. You will. You will see those moments for sure.
Hollywood. There's a great podcast called by Wondery. It's a great story. It's this guy does his podcast and they do reenactments and he plays every character in the reenactments.
I love it.
It says like he plays George Lucas talking to Gary Kurtz. He's both voices. It's really bizarre.
Awesome.
It's really bizarre. But the story of how that movie got made. Mm-hmm. And like, not only did George Lucas doubt himself, but all of his friends were like, this is shit.
Yeah.
This is stupid. This is terrible.
My friend Zach's aunt drew most of like the monsters from the original Star Wars, just as like a sketch up.
Yeah.
Cause she's an artist.
Yeah.
And at the time, like, okay, so what? She
worked for Ralph.
Sand people? What the who? All right. Maybe they look like this. Maybe they ride this kind of beast. And thought nothing. This ain't going nowhere. Are you going to do another heavy metal type comic?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember heavy metal?
Movies
and those comics, you know, the buxom women and you know, riding lizards and shit. So she probably thought it was just going to be some other dime store bullshit, and it became the biggest movie of all time.
Oh,
so nobody knew.
Crazy. You know? All right. Well, your album is called
Please Hold Me.
And your podcast is called
This Might Help with Matt Bronger.
You need to get out. You need to get some Purell. You need to get some.
I got to make a Purell run.
You got to go get some canned peaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we'll go from there. Matt Bryant, thanks for coming by.
Thank you, man.
Other podcasts reach for the sky. Dana Goldbauer.
We barely try.
This has been the Dana Gould Hour, brought to you by The Internet. Music by Andy Paley, with Jake Posner behind the board. Produced by Jeff Fox. Graphic design and web production by Spencer Hunt and Segan Friend. Sound editing and post-production by Jalinda Palmer and Joe Napolitano. Hey, if you like the show, why don't you drop us a line at show@danagould.com. Tom Kenny speaking.
I'm a person, I'm a person, I'm a singer, I'm a singer, I love to sing and DJ.